and welcome to episode 206 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and I'm here with the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The owner of a brand new Funko Pop. Yes, I said that correct.
I have.
He has a new Funko Pop. It's Tony Esmond.
It was bought for me, and it does look like me. That's the reason.
But do you love it?
Well, I sleep with it. In fact, Sharknado pulled the head off it the other day.
No.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
So it's already been
ruined.
Wobbly
heads. You know, it's got like a wobbly head one.
Oh, I don't like those ones.
I heard some crunching, and I looked over, and it was Sharknado with it.
Do you think? Because if it looks like you, and he's ripped its head off, do you think that's a sign of things to come?
I don't let him watch me when I'm pulling the head off it.
And that's the sort of show we're going to have this week, folks. I mean, seriously, you won't believe the amount of dad jokes I've had to listen to in the past 5 minutes. Let alone.
I told you a touching story.
Yeah. Well, yeah, literally a story about touching. So we're not going to talk about. But no, because this week we've got another guest. Yes.
Yep.
We're joined by the creator of the colourful, trippy and awesome comic world known as Om, of which there's several great books, isn't there, Tony?
Yeah, there are. I've been raving about them for a while as well.
Yes. Yeah. So we are very pleased to be joined this week by Andy Barron. Hello, sir.
Hi there.
Andy.
That's smooth.
That was smooth.
No.
Andy, I feel sorry for Andy because he had to stand next to me for 3 days at LCAF while I said exactly the same thing about the books I had on my table.
Did you really, though? I mean, let's get stuck into this straight away. Shall we? Oh, actually, no.
We've got the advert to do.
I guess. Is it an advert? It's just nothing but fun. Surely something this fun can't be seen as work. God, this is just going off the rails. Dan, who are we sponsored by?
Comic House.
Yes.
The Netflix for comics.
Yeah, we made that up.
And the indie marketplace with a difference. It's Netflix for comics, but other people have been using it as well. There's a huge selection of titles on their database. If you self-publish your comic, you can upload your comics on there, and it's another sort of shop front with which to sell your comics. I know some listeners have recently uploaded their work there, which is brilliant. And also, if you've got digital comics, you definitely want to go on there because they have their own app. Yes, it's a subscription service which has so many titles on it, and it's growing all the time. In fact, what's on there this week, Dan?
We've got Slaughterhouse Farm, which I read the other day. That's an interesting one.
That woke you up, didn't it?
It's like Friday the 13th set in Wales. We've got the High Priestess.
All of Wales, to be fair.
Lizard Men issue 5, Lost in Time, and Sugarcane, the mini comic, which is fantastic.
Oh, that's great.
That. Kev Brett. Yeah. That's a really good one.
We've been privy to the sort of process on that, and it's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good.
Kev Cooling, not Kev Brett. Kev Brett's...
Sorry, Kev Cooling. Sorry, Kev Brett. The
too many Kevs on the dance floor, that's what it is.
Yeah. Pete's keen that everyone goes and claims their profile this week. That's what he's been asking. And I have to say, I was ashamed that I hadn't. So I went and did it, and I'm not sure if I've done it right. I think I just wrote, Tony's hips don't lie, and I sent it to him. But it seems to have done something. I don't really know what it's done.
Yes. I know Dan's got one on there as well, hasn't he? He's got his...
You've got a blue steel photo.
He's got his blue steel photo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is he just not talking to us now, Tony? Is that what...
Has he pulled it out of the back of his thing again?
I think he's pulled it out of the back, haven't you, Dan?
Where's he gone?
He's just gone. Do you know, sometimes I think he just doesn't want to talk to us. Although, you know, who can blame
us? I sent him a picture of a sandworm fleshlight earlier. He's probably gone away to try and order one.
Oh, Jesus Christ. This is within the first 5 minutes of this show. Anyway, so as Dan said, there's a bunch of great comics on Comic House. If you sign up for the sort of service, the digital app and stuff, it's only £3 a month, which is cheap as chips. Probably cheaper than chips, actually, and cheaper than most comics, especially digital comics. The price of digital comics is
going up,
isn't
it? Yeah.
So you get access to that whole library of comics and more, including work by lots of people that have already been on the show, our good selves, and more. So to find out more about it, and for a 14-day free trial, go to comichouse.com and find out more. So, Dan, what is it? Do you just not want to talk to us?
No, the computer... Could be had a bit of wobble.
We've heard that before, haven't we, Tony?
Back in the room.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good. I'm live streaming like cam girls as well. So it's kind of fucking the...
What's a cam girl?
It's when a young lady takes her clothes off in front of a camera and you pay exorbitant amounts of money.
We're going to talk about comics this week.
Yeah, I didn't think it was this kind of podcast. Liar.
Yes, we ask that we ask the really tricky questions on this show, and we're not asking about Dan's personal life anymore because I think that's like the Battle of the Somme. No, but before we did our very poorly executed weekly sponsorship ad, we were about to talk about LCAF because obviously last week, Tony, you joined us for a little bit, but you know, LCAF was a fresh show. You know, we wanted to get the proper sort of rundown. I know you were there as well, Andy. So we thought we'd start the show with a little bit of a rundown of LCAF, as me and Dan weren't there, so we can just sit back. We can put our feet up for the next 10 minutes or so, can't we, Dan, and just take it easy?
We can indeed.
Yeah.
Good. So LCAF's is essentially the No Brow Festival, although they do have different staff that run it. A couple of them used to work for No Brow, so it's kind of still in the family. And it runs traditionally, and has done for the last few years, at the Round Chapel and Old School Rooms in Hackney. It runs Friday to Saturday. It's got the more sort of, I don't know what you thought of it, Sandy, but it's got the sort of civilised opening hours of 12 till 7.
Yeah, I think that worked quite well this year.
Yeah, I do. It's a strange time, isn't it? I'm going to sort of hazard a guess and say some of the crowd aren't the sort of people who'll get up early and get to a convention. And there was a few hangovers flying around on the Saturday morning. Because of Friday night, they have, if you're if you table at LCAF on a Friday, or if you're sort of friends with someone, you can come in and they do this thing because you're so busy at your table generally at this event. They have a Friday, they close down at 7. Normal ticket holders, the scum as we refer to them, leave. It gives you the chance to wander around other people's tables and buy stuff and have a beer and stuff. And I think that's kind of a good idea. So we're normally, me, Vince and Dan will be busy at a convention and not get to the tables we want to get to. LCAF, it gives you that chance. You know what I mean? I think that's kind of quite a good idea. What do you think, boys? Is that right?
Yeah, that's a good point. So. Yeah,
gives you a chance to do your buying and stuff like that as well. And they also, the second year running, they've had their own beer. So I think it's a brewery in Crystal Palace makes this sort of beer. Did you have any, Andy? I didn't have any in the end.
Yeah, it's the Gypsy Hill Brewery.
That's nice.
Yeah. Good beer.
Can't say Gypsy. That's a callback to an old review. <That's it.
laughs> So we've got our own, moving on, we've got our own beer. I mean, where it is in Hackney is probably ground zero for craft beers and, you know, vegan cafes and that sort of thing. It's not really a proper like big hipster event. It's actually just nice people, really, to be fair. There's a lot of sort of creativity in the room and a lot of people actually pull their finger out and make comics, which is really good, I think.
Yeah.
And we've all complained about these sort of zine fairs and stuff, naming no names, that it's just like a shit print that someone drew with a biro. But there was a lot of really good comics for sale there as well. Did you find that? Did you buy much, Andy? Or
I bought a little bit on the Sunday night, but as you were saying, you never really get enough time to actually look around when you're tabling these things. But I totally agree with you. I think it's a great mix of, like, there are people doing prints, but you get a lot of people who are dedicated to comics and are doing new things with comics. I think that's what I like about LCAF so much.
Yeah, there are. And there's, Self-Made Hero were there, and Decadence, and Avery Hill, and there's a few sort of publishers, you know.
Yeah.
Publishers and micro-publishers who are there, as well as just people who are off their own back, you know.
Definitely.
We tend to get guests, so we do have guests. Over the years, we've had Mariko Tamaki and Victor Huseno and Klaus and all these sort of people in before. But this year was mostly people who'd produced books recently through No Brow. So AJ Dungo was there with his, which is the book I've been raving on about for donkeys, you know, for months now, is In Waves, which is just an absolute fucking masterpiece. We had John McNaught as well, who had his own table. He's just across from us, wasn't he, Andy?
That's right, yeah.
And John's a class act. John, we had quite a good little position because we were, as you come in and buy your ticket, you walk straight in and you're presented with the No Brow table. And then just next to the No Brow table was Andy. So weren't it, we weren't too bad where we were, I reckon.
Oh, it was perfect. Yeah, I think it was the best spot in the place, really. But Anna was so busy on the Saturday that all the footfall was coming right past our tables, which always helps.
Yeah, it was busy. It was Friday. I'm going to say, if you're going to go on a Friday. Now, Nobrow do or Elkaf do a thing where the tables aren't the same for the whole weekend, which is an interesting twist on the convention thing. So you're not sat next to always the same person. I know Joe Stone, who we'll probably hear from in a minute. The person sitting next to him changed a couple of times over the weekend.
Is
So they.
that because some people only come in for a day and then go and
Or I think they. I think it's more. I mean, there is a bit of that, but I think it's more that some people can only fit in. They can only fit in for a day. So where it's curated, they try their best. They don't just fill the hall up with, you know, oh, we filled the tables for all 3 days. That's fine. They're saying, right, who would be good on a Friday? Who haven't we seen before? Maybe we'll try them out on the Friday. Who can only spare the time on the Sunday? You know, that sort of thing. So the tables do. If you buy a weekend ticket, you know, it's good for talks and stuff like that, as it always is at these conventions. But it also you get to see different artists and different creators and different product on the tables, which I think is kind of a good idea, especially for something that's 3 days and in not a huge, you know, place. It's not like the MCM, you know.
And I noticed like the tables and stuff, like it's not a convention where people have banners and stuff, is it? Like,
It's not.
so
No.
it's almost like everyone's on completely the same playing field, in that sense.
Yeah, there's no they've experimented a few times with sort of cardboard backing boards and stuff like that, but we didn't really have that this year. There's a few places you can hang your stuff up. There's people sort of blue tacking it to the wall behind them and stuff like that, and they're quite cool about that. But no, the traditional banner wasn't something that I saw at all there. You know, like the roller banner. Because we had ours with us in case we sort of thought we could put it up outside, but it pissed with rain most of Friday, so we'd end up not using it. But yeah, so the Friday was pretty good. The Friday it rained quite heavily, but the footfall was reasonable. You know, it was good for most conventions, I would say. You know, so
And it's a Friday.
It was pretty good. Not packed, but pretty good. And the Saturday was just unbearably packed. It was just like rammed. I literally didn't. There was hours went by where I didn't look up from the table from sort of selling and stuff. It was really good. To be honest with you, I don't know why. Some conventions are quiet and some conventions are busy, but this one was just inordinately busy, really.
Awesome.
Excellent. Not talking numbers, but we did very well out of it, you know. And I think I didn't hear anyone do badly out of it, from the sort of thing. And then Sunday was slightly quieter than the Saturday, but still. I mean, we sold out of a couple of books on the Friday, and then we sold out of our main books on the Saturday. So we were sort of scrabbling to get stock to stick on the table. It's almost like that, you know. So pretty good.
So in terms of, I know when we certainly talked about MCM and the dialogue you were having with people that came to the table and stuff, and I know at MCM, it was almost you're saying it was different to pretty much most of the other conventions you go to because you're almost informing people about every book, you know, each time. Was this crowd a different sort of crowd? They kind of already knew what they were looking for, you know.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, Andy, you maybe haven't heard us talk about this, but we did MCM, and we did the elk we did the Nobrow table MCM, and we had to sort of everyone who came to the table. It was a hard sell. It wasn't a hard sell, but it was you had to put your time in. Do you know
You
what I
had to
mean?
work it.
And you had to tell people about comics. You know, almost just said, "Have you ever read a comic?" It's almost like building it up from that point. You know, Elcaf is slightly different. It's more like people collect Nobrow books, so it was like, "What you got new?" You know, and it was more sort of, "Oh, we got a signing in a minute," because we had a space on our table where people did come and did signings, and Drew did some sketching and stuff. And it was like, "Well, you know, well he'll be here in 10 minutes. If you want to buy a book, these are running low." Or people were looking at books all the time, so it's sort of I would engage them and say, "Oh, have you seen that one before?" Or you know, people would literally ask for your advice about what they should buy and stuff like that. So it was a much sort of comics friendly crowd as you'd expect, but there's the people knew what they were coming for and they knew, you know, they would come and buy straight away. It was nearly all card payments as well, which is interesting. The MCM was nearly all cash. And this was nearly all car payments. I don't know why there's that distinction. I really don't know
It's
why.
quite interesting though, you know. I maybe would have thought it would be the other way around, but you know, just shows that everything you can't go into any convention thinking you know what the how the customer is going to be.
You know? Yeah, I think you're right, man. Yeah. I mean, there's loads of people we know there. Gareth Brooks, who's been on the show. Kat Chapman was there. Ricky Miller, Dave White, Josh Hicks, Joe Stone. Myriad publishers were there. There's loads of people who we would know. You know, if you wandered around, you came down, you would see Adam Faulp turned up. There's lots of people who sort of turned up, and it was a really friendly crowd. It was Gareth Hopkins made me laugh. He was a helper, you know, sort of volunteer. And he'd said to someone, he said, oh, something along the lines of, I'll keep my eye out for people nicking chairs. And they looked at him like he was speaking a foreign language. And they're going, oh, they'd just be lending a chair, weren't they? You know, it's not like that MCM thing where you almost had to buy your chair down overnight, you know?
Yeah.
So just a couple of shouts out to the people who I worked with and hung about with. So there was John McNaught, AJ Dungo, Tom Hoganaught. We had Carlos Porter, who does some kids' books for us. Daniel Locke was there. Gareth Hopkins, I've mentioned already. Sam, Zoe, Ayula, Ivana, Emily, Lily, and Marie. So all of Nobrow turn up and basically do their time at the table. They do a turn at the table sort of thing. Because it's my job, I was there more than the others. It was a rush, man. It really was. The good thing about the venue as well, it's a bit like True Believers, where you've got like a quiet space upstairs. So there's like a balcony. I don't suppose you got there, Andy, did you?
No, I didn't at all over the weekend.
You were landlocked, weren't you? Yeah. But I had a few breaks from the table, and I went and sat up there and read books. I read Andy's actually and sat up there, and it's like this sort of peaceful bit, you know, like a True Believers when it was at the race course.
Yeah.
A bit like that. And I was sat up there, and AJ came up, and we had a chat, and it was just nice to sit there, and it's like a relaxing time. They have stalls outside selling sort of beer and, you know, burgers, and there's a little tent. Interestingly, this is another thing I found interesting. They've got a talk tent outside which held some of the talks. John McNaught's talk was out there, but because of the local bylaws, they had to give out headphones for everyone. Everyone was sat in the audience, and it was a packed venue wearing headphones. So John would be talking into a microphone, and it would be in the headphones. That was quite unusual.
That's a strange one. That's weird. That's like when you're on a conference call with someone in the same room as you, and surely there would be some sort of delay on the audio just by a split second.
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't like putting other people's headphones on, so to be fair, I didn't put them on. Yeah.
You play by your own rules, don't you, Tony?
I know. Yeah. No, it's good. I mean, we had a blast, and set up and breakdown was just fast. You know, at the end of a convention where suddenly you turned around and the hall is empty.
Yeah.
And
you've
been chatting and you haven't even put your books in a box.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that for us because we had so much stock and boxes and bloody umbrellas and tablecloths and all that sort of thing. But yeah, it was all right. And then I drove home and got online to speak to you guys. It was good, man. It was good. And everyone was sort of, everyone wanders around. Yeah, at normal convention, if someone came to our table drinking a can of lager, you'd go, oh, here we go. Wouldn't you? Quite often.
Yeah.
But there was quite a few people. There was one particular stallholder, I won't name him, who was quite pissed and kept coming over. And he bought a big selection of our books one day, and we suspect he lost them on the bus because he came and rebought them.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. So what was the show like for you then? I mean, obviously, like, Tony's got almost, you know, you're on the inside in some ways, aren't you, Tony, with this show? I mean, in previous years on this podcast, you've been talking from the visitor standpoint.
Yeah, I have, yeah. That's where it changes, isn't it?
But as a sort of tabler and exhibitor, how was the show for you, Andy?
Yeah, really good fun. I mean, this is the third year I've done LCAF now.
Oh, wow.
It was definitely the busiest year I've done. But I think it's got a great atmosphere. People are coming there to buy new comics, and I think they're coming to buy stuff they can't find in shops, which is the great thing about these kind of conventions. It just good atmosphere. All the people tabling are dead friendly. I think it was definitely the best year I've done there.
Cool. Do you ever like see people that from previous years come back to your table to pick up a new book?
Yeah, definitely. And also just meeting people, I think. To Tony. But meeting people that you've spoken to online, which I know happens at all sorts of conventions.
Yeah.
But I did meet a few people I've been speaking to on Twitter or just via email for the past couple of years. actually got introduced to those people last weekend. It's just, this is quite a small community in some ways. And it's got a lot of crossover, whatever type of conventions you do. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Did you do a portfolio review at all, Andy? They call it
Uh,
Spring Deck or
yeah,
something.
I did one. I did one last year.
Right.
So I took up a few pieces just from my comics. And I think they did that again this year.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I know. I know a few people who did it.
Yeah, so like they do that kind of stuff. It's all that extra stuff that goes with it. It's not just people tabling. You can take your work into show to professionals. They've got those talks that Tony was talking about. It's got kind of like a festival atmosphere to it almost. That might sound a bit over the top, but
No, it does. It definitely does.
it's got all the different kind of things. So you can go and do a bit of shopping, then you can go and listen to a talk, get some food.
They've got a sort of
There's music
workshop
playing.
table as well, haven't they? Where,
Yeah.
sometimes it's for kids and sometimes it's for adults, and you make little things and
So like I think that's what they do such a good job of, and is quite different to the other cons I've done over the years. It's kind of got like quite a broad appeal for people.
Yeah, I've said it before, and I think there's a community feel to it, definitely. And that's what encourages people to keep coming and come along and all that sort of thing. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that's it. I think I'd say 3 years I've done this, but it just feels like it's going from strength to strength as a festival.
Oh, definitely.
It's certainly in terms of the sort of body of work that's on there, because we've been talking about this show for the past couple of years, but it's not necessarily the sort of thing you'd see at a not you know a lot of some of the bigger conventions, or some of these, there's no su there's not a superhero in sight. Well, not your conventional sort of superhero or anything like that, is it? This is definitely more on the, how would you describe the sort of audience? And it's,
There's a DIY element to some of their stuff. There's an illustration element to some people's
definitely,
tables.
yeah, big time.
There's a graphic novel long form storytelling element often. I know genuinely there's people there who couldn't tell you the name of a superhero comic. John Bishop came down, who's a friend of ours from the board, from the Facebook group, and I was sort of joking, saying I was going to go and sit up in the balcony and read Savage Avengers. And he just sort of laughed. And I said, I don't think there's many people would know what that was,
But that, I mean, that's one of the things I love about this community, though. There's something that caters for all tastes, no matter how broad or whatever it is. Do you know what I mean? It shows the importance of these shows and why, like, a show like this, when handled right and put on right, it just gets stronger and stronger every year. It's one I've definitely, it's on my list to visit one day, and probably.
I think you'd dig it, man. I think even if you just came down on the Friday and travelled home on the Saturday or something, it's a social event as well. There's as many people sitting around drinking and chatting outside as there are often inside, Yeah, it's pretty good
Oh,
like that.
okay.
And you come back inspired after the show, I'd imagine.
You really do. Yeah, no, I did. Yeah, speaking about the other stuff that's said, there's quite a lot of autobiographical stuff still. Not as much as we've seen in past years, I'd say. There's more comedy comics. There's more sort of manga-inspired books, maybe as a sort of smattering of that. There's the few prints and stuff like that, but there's a lot of comics and stuff, and there's a lot of people who are prepared just to talk to you about comics. I could talk about comics all day when I'm sat with these people.
Oh, brilliant. So, and it's going to happen again next year? Was it
Let's hope so.
let's hope so.
Hope so.
So, hopefully, you never know. Me and Dan might pop in for the day, might we,
Yeah,
Dan?
come down, man. I'll get you on the list.
We'll take a packed lunch. Oh, we can get on lists now. Do you hear that, Dan? We can get on lists.
I'll get you on the door, baby.
I've never
My
been
name
on a
is
list
Dan, and
before.
I'm coming in.
If you hear a kerfuffle, it's just Dan going, "Don't you know who I am?"
And whilst there, I grabbed a couple of interviews as well.
You did indeed. Do you want to do the intro? We've got an extra little bit of a treat for you here
Couple
in
of
our
short
face.
5-minute interviews. There's one with Mr. Falp, who turned up. He's in the middle of a Kickstarter at the moment, so we had a little bit of chat about that as well. And following that will be one with Joe Stone, who I really love Joe. So we talked about his book Stutter a few weeks ago, and I bought a couple more of his books at the show and read them upstairs on the balcony during my break.
Yeah,
Re
I've just
really
bought
good
his
stuff.
as well. Really good.
Yes, great stuff. And he's also the runner of the Hackney Comic and Zine Fair, which is coming your way in September, which will be out. Are you going to that one, Andy, or?
I didn't know about that one, but I'll have a look into it.
Send him a message, man. Yeah, it's going to be good. If there was ever a place that needed a comic and zine fair, it's Hackney, let's face it. And it's also conveniently just around the corner from my office, so that's quite nice. So there's a couple of interviews. They're only short ones, but have a listen. Right, with Adam Phelps, who's just drunk. What's the lager you've just drunk?
This is Elkaff Dry Hopped Hells, I want to say.
Hells, I don't know. 4.8.
4.8. Right. So I'm going to be...
Off your nut. Yeah.
I'll have a few.
What's it normally, Stella, for you?
I'm more of a Foster's man. I don't know if that makes me any... I don't know if that makes me...
Well, it reduces you in my eyes, to be fair. Mm. Yeah. No Nelson Mandela for you.
I only really drink Stella if I'm in a old Italian convertible driving across the Riviera.
So fucking never then. Yeah. So we're at Elkaff. It's too busy inside, isn't it? Nuts.
Yeah, it's a bit crazy. It's obviously become a bit trendy to be here this year. So
we're out by the dustbins.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we're supposed to be out the back here. It's obviously the Esmond interview area.
Luckily, we're clothed for a change. Lee, now you've got the fragment. Now, as we record, you've got 20 days to go on, haven't you?
Yeah, it's around 20 days. I'll try not to check because I get all upset and if the money don't go up and stuff. So,
have you gone a bit OCD on your Kickstarter then, have you? Or
not too bad. I'm trying to play it cool. I'm trying to play it cool. So I did, you know, I was sort of pushing it for the first few days and it got funded.
Yeah, you did it really quickly, didn't you? Yeah, I have backed it, I'd like to point out.
Thank you very much. Yeah. You were on the first, Tony.
Oh, thank you. Oh, great. Yeah.
Shout out to you. But yeah, no, it's lucky it did. I mean, obviously, everyone says they sort of slow down in the middle, and this one has as well. But so I'm grateful it got funded first before it slowed down. Otherwise, it would have been a bit embarrassing.
Yeah, it was easily funded as well, wasn't it? Yeah.
I tried to make the goal nice and low, because all I want to do is get it printed and try and...
Okay. So tell us a little bit about what the fragment's about.
So the fragment is about a British secret agent called Thomas Locke in the 1950s who suffers from severe sort of multiple personality disorder.
Okay. Yeah.
So he gets sent out on his missions. And in the first book, he was sent to South Korea for the Korean War, where some incidents happened. I'll try not to ruin anything.
Okay.
And then... this one, they're two separate single issues, but this one carries on after that.
Right, okay. So it's called The Cambridge...
It's The Cambridge File. It's right. The first part set in Cambridge.
Oh, right. It's a fairly obvious sort
of thing. Yeah, a little bit. I mean, and...
It's, lucky you didn't set it in Croydon.
I mean, that wouldn't have been as cool, would it? It wouldn't be as cool. Thomas Locke is... it's sort of a bit of like... it goes back to where he's with Ring of Spies... growing up in Cambridge, and then it sort of moves forward to after the events of the first one.
Okay. Oh, cool. Sounds good. So that's due to finish soon. That's like an ongoing project that you keep dipping back into, is it? Or
I'm not sure. I mean, if you'd have asked me maybe 2 months ago,
yeah,
I'd have said there's definitely no more.
Okay.
I'm done. Yeah. But sort of drawing this one and then promoting it and seeing everyone so kind towards the project. It's sort of maybe in the future I'll go. I've got some other stuff to do next year, but maybe I'd never say never anymore.
Right. Okay. Cool. Yeah. There may be some wind on this because it's a bit windy, isn't it?
And police, because we're in East London.
Yeah. Well, somebody's obviously missed out a carafe of black coffee.
Yeah. Well, someone's run out of no brow. But...
Yeah. Which I'm getting phone calls in my pocket about at the moment. Yeah. So what else you got planned? You got anything else coming up? Or?
I'm doing an event for Small Press Day.
Right.
I've got like a mini comic coming out for that, which is going to be a bit weird.
Are you allowed to say about the printing thing you just told me about? Or?
I'm trying to find someone. It's my first sort of foray into the horror genre,
Okay. Which
I don't sort of dabble in too much. But I'm trying to make the book glow in the dark,
right, okay.
Which I'm struggling with. So if anyone can print glow in the dark books for a reasonable price, yeah, get in touch with me.
And where can people get hold of you, man?
I'm on Instagram and Twitter. Just my name, Adam Phelps. That's F-A-L-P.
Yep.
Goodfornothingcomics.wordpress.com.
Cool. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Don.
I'm here with still at Elkaff, although it's a bit noisy, so apologies. Yeah, the music came on as you came in. Do you know that? It literally started.
I planned that. I talked to them ahead of time and I asked them to have like a kind of... Like a theme tune for me to walk into.
So. Maybe Here Comes a Hot Stepper next time.
I should have thought of that first.
So I'm here with Joe Stone. Now, we reviewed Stutter a few months ago, Joe, I reckon.
I think it was about a month and a half or 2 months ago.
Yeah, cool. And I bought a couple of other books of yours yesterday. I bought Like, Tweet...
match repeat, which is very good. Thank you very much. Of your experiences, partly on Tinder. I'm not going to say it's you.
I mean, that one was all kind of loosely inspired by things I've encountered or seen. Not necessarily me. There's a few in there that are very much more inspired by things that I've done, and some that I did for comedic effects. But yeah.
It's very good, man. I really like it. And Leftovers, which is, you were telling me yesterday, a sort of collection of shorts you've done and stuff.
Yeah, so that's the various things over the last
how long do you reckon?
A couple of years. So it's got a mixture of things, old and.
You wearing loads of hats, yeah. And I have to say, because we've sat opposite each other, we haven't had a chance to stare into each other's eyes because it's been so busy. To be fair,
it's been very busy. Yeah.
And you have worn a variety of hats this weekend.
I've had a different hat every day of the day of the weekend. That was a partially conscious choice. When you write a short story about hats, you feel obliged. Yeah. You have to wear hats now. Yeah, I can't. I can't not wear hats.
Write about a serial killer. Never.
Very good idea, just in case. Sorry.
And you're also running Hackney Zine Fair, which is September.
That's going to become. It's all kind of falling into place.
Are you in charge then, are you?
Loosely. I like to think. it's kind of taking care of itself mostly. I'm the head honcho, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not here. That's what I've heard. There's a bit of a buzz about it. Now, why Hackney hasn't got one, I don't know.
This one counts, I guess, as the same kind of place, I suppose.
I suppose it kind of is a zine fair. It's got the same sort of vibe here, isn't it? But yeah, it's not, more. There's more sort of publishers and stuff like that.
Yep.
So it's more of a DIY feel, or?
Very much.
So where can people apply if they want to come along? Where's the website?
So applications to have touch
of the tables there. Maybe we'll get you on before and you can give us a shout.
Yeah, it'd be good.
Now, man, I love your work. I really like it. I think I did actually call you the indie Jaime Hernandez. So there is a little the clean line.
Thanks.
That's good.
Cheers. Thank you.
We'll go back to just staring at each other across the aisle for a bit, shall we?
Great.
Yeah, cool.
Nice one.
Thanks, man.
Thanks very much.
There you go. Nice couple of bits of audio. Tony. I appreciate you just actually taking time to actually try and get some, because you totally didn't have to, because you're busy enough on these sort of shows.
Yeah, pretty mad busy, I've got to tell you. It was non-stop, but yeah. I enjoy that sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? I've been a comics fan for 22 years, you know.
Yeah.
it's nice to like working them now, so it's pretty fun.
Yeah. Look at you, you've become.
I saw quite a few people walking off with a certain Mr. Barron's comics under their arm during the day.
Yeah. Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
I think my boss had one, didn't he? I saw him with one in his bag.
Yeah. And I'm sure after this show, a few of our listeners, if they haven't got them already, we'll be seeking out your work as well. That's a wonderful segue to talk about the work itself, isn't it?
There you go.
Because without Andy's work, it's something very different, but also he deals in a sort of narrative storytelling that we haven't really discussed on this show much before in depth, so we're going to get into that a bit at the moment. But before, let's just start off with your work itself, Andy, and your series Om. Now, there's several different sort of books in it, like Tantra, Sutra, and things like this, but it's all part of this one world or one sort of universe, isn't it? Just tell us a bit more about what actually your comics are about.
Yeah, that's right. So I've been publishing them for about 5 years. They're all set in the same world, as you said, World of Om. They're all silent, so there's no words. But I'm trying to build up a bigger picture of this world through every book that I publish. So I'm introducing new characters, kind of introducing new interactions. And I'm kind of hoping it's going to build up into kind of a richer picture as you kind of read through them. So, Tony, I know you've read probably a few of the books.
Yeah, no, I love them, man. We've all read them now. Yeah, love them. I'm a big fan of them, man.
The first one I sent to you guys was Mantra, which was in 2016.
Is that the, what's the actual sort of numerical order of the books if people were going to sort of read these?
So the ones I've published are Mantra, which is actually out of print now, but that was a collection of some really early short comics that I was publishing.
Mm-hmm.
Then I did a book called Tantra, which was a standalone. And I've also done Sutra, and my latest one is called Aman. But what are they about? It's a kind of a fantasy world. The main character is called Om. So it looks quite different from the everyday world, but I feel like I'm dealing with everyday emotions and feelings within the stories. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's
always quite difficult to explain, but
They are. They're not an easy one to explain without. I mean, we talk about a visual medium on an audio product, don't we? Let's face it.
But
they are
narratively.
They are.
Take you along, don't they? I mean, this is what I found when I was reading it. I think partially because they are silent as well. Once you're in with the visuals, it's like. It's like a song where you just start listening and you're just following and it flows and you're going with it rather than being told, you know, what to do and what is happening.
I think that's right, and kind of leaving the words out, you're kind of letting the reader do a bit of the work. You're letting them kind of fill in the gaps as they go through. Definitely.
It's a really different reading experience reading art, because I'm going to talk about them later, but I've just read a couple of books by Jim Woodring who does the same. And I imagine he's an influence of yours, Andy. Love his stuff. But it's a completely different experience. But when you open a comic and there's a lot of words on the page, sometimes you go, "Oh right, I've got to read all this now." Do you know what I mean? Or sometimes it flows doesn't it?
Yeah.
But this is just there's none of that. I'm not going to kind of going to call it a heavy responsibility. There's no heavy responsibility on you to read everything. It's just there's a sort of intricate movement to your books, but if treated correctly, it is a dense read because there's a lot going on in a lot of your panels. Yeah. You know, there's an industrialization scene, which there's a lot going on in that one.
But
you
what
know?
I noticed as well, there's not many panels to a page. It's
no, yeah, it could have three or four times.
I think I had this kind of rule I was working out. I could get about four movements in per page. That was kind of me thinking.
Oh, interesting.
How many actions can a character make on one page?
Yeah,
I think about four was the max I've ever worked out. That wasn't kind of planned. It's just how it's worked out as I've been working.
Okay, because it is also it's also very strange for the people. There's no humans in it. I just want to sort of describe it for the readers as well. There's humanoids, but there's no what we would ordinarily describe as humans. Are they really?
Well, they're definitely not humans. No.
There's a lot of dongs in it. I'm going to say that.
A lot of dongs. Yeah. A lot of big nipples as well.
And it's the sort of style of your artwork. It has this sort of old timey sort of animation feel. It's like a psychedelic dreamlike sequence that would come from like the Steamboat Willie sort of era. You know, that sort of there's a certain animated style to it. That's why I think the pages work so well, because they feel like they move. They really do have a movement to them.
That's definitely something I try and get across with the characters. It's kind of. You don't have words to show what their personality is like or what they're thinking.
Yeah,
you've kind of got to convey that through the movement.
Okay.
How does this character move on the page? Like, does that kind of give the reader some indication of what they're all about?
Yeah, there's a fluidity to them, isn't there? There really is.
Yeah.
They're kind of a cross between Barber Papa and I don't know if you ever saw the Ralph Bakshi movie Wizards.
Yeah, I get that one referenced quite a lot, actually. Yeah.
Oh, do you? Okay. Right. Not something that it wasn't an influence.
No,
it's just something
I hadn't seen it before, but people have brought that up.
Nice. Yeah. So how did you start with this then? Have you got a history in illustration? Have you? Are you a lover of comics that led to this, or are you?
I've been reading comics all my life. I moved down to London about 10 years ago to study illustration.
Okay.
But the stuff I was doing at uni wasn't anything like this. I was trying to do more kind of commercial style illustration. And it was only after I left that I was kind of like, well, if I don't draw these comics now, when am I going to draw them? It kind of gave me a kick to do them. But the character of Orm I'd actually had in my sketchbooks for, you're probably talking about 12 years. It was just this little doodle that kept coming back up in my sketchbooks. And eventually started thinking what stories could this character kind of take part in. Yeah, it's been quite a long kind of period of time. It's been a long part of my life, really. Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's expanded from Om himself, because this is a world and a universe, isn't it? So, just, I mean, even though things are, I'm going to ask the impossible now, even though we're saying it's quite hard to describe this book and what goes on, just to give people a bit more information about the universe of Om, how would you describe that universe to someone?
So I think Om's kind of like an everyman character, and he's put in normally quite hostile situations, and it's about how he reacts to them. The world itself is kind of a desert environment. But I really feel like with each story I can have total free rein about what I want to write about at any given time. So I was trying to say earlier, it's like, it's about human emotions. I know you said it's not human characters, but
yeah,
whatever I'm kind of thinking about or going through at any particular time, it normally ends up in an Om story.
Okay.
That's quite helpful for me. It's almost like a vehicle for me to kind of work out my feelings about something.
Okay.
And I really hope that comes across the readers as well.
Yeah.
It's not just daft stories. It's kind of like there is something else going on underneath the surface.
With that though, have you ever had one moment, because one of the things about pouring your own emotions or your own experiences of the time into a story, has there ever been a moment where you've put like a few pages down on paper and then they thought maybe it was too personal, or maybe you've moved on from that moment that you don't want to share that?
Yeah,
definitely. I've got a few of those written in my book.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll ever get made. But
yeah,
again, it's kind of like, I'm saying there how personal they are, but I don't want readers to be thinking, oh, this is what Andy was thinking at this particular time.
I mean, if I ever thought this is an autobiographical book.
Yeah. I wonder what my whole life looks like.
I was in this factory surrounded by naked men. shovels. And they made me eat tea when they were drunk. And I had these things on my nipples. We've all had that dream, Andy. I'll be honest with you.
Exactly, yeah.
Reading through the stories, that one where they're getting him drunk and then they all seem to kind of like set on him. It's kind of like, that was real kind of, it seemed like a real dark moment, that one.
It's a real cheese dream, isn't it?
That's the newest book I've done, so I'm on. That's the longest standalone story, so it's 24 pages.
Yeah.
And that story had kind of been floating around in a sketchbook for a couple of years. I couldn't quite work out exactly how it was going to pan out, but I definitely had this image of him in this big factory. And something just clicks. I'll tend to have kind of stories of kind of half formed for a couple of years, and then an ending just suggests itself.
I know what you mean, because you end on a cliffhanger on that one, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
You end on a. I'm not going to overtly spoil it, but you end on a cliffhanger where a realization hits on that he might not be on his own, or he might be part of something, or he might be changing into something, you know.
Definitely. And I think that's kind of like, I often get asked about reading orders and what's going to happen next, but I tend to think of them more like an old cartoon where it's just standalone, you know, like an old Tom and Jerry. There's no continuity there, really.
Yeah.
Fight each other.
Yeah.
So in the next book, it wouldn't carry on from that ending.
It's necessarily carry on. It's not like a straight narrative.
No, I don't think you need to on that one.
I like that we don't have rules. We don't need those rules. You know, there's not an advertising executive leaning over our shoulder insisting, oh, the public will want to know what happens. You know,
definitely,
we do what we like, don't we? You know,
that's like the great freedom of self-publishing. But also that idea that you might have read all of the Om comics and kind of have a better understanding of the characters. You might have just read one and it's still kind of going to be a good experience. You're not having to jump in or catch up with what's happened before. That's what I try and go for.
Yeah, I think when you're doing, because they're a good chunk, they're a lengthy read, these books, and I think when you're bringing out one pretty much every year, you do one is a year.
Yeah, I've been doing about one a year.
People are going to need to read it as a standalone because the audience changes. It's not always people who bought your previous stuff are going to read it. You know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. What were all your sort of artistic influences around this sort of style, Andy? I could easily guess at Woodring, but then again, I know you liked a couple of the tweets I put out earlier. But
Jim Woodring is he's my hero.
He's a genius. Yeah,
absolutely. He's a genius. I think he's just one of like the all-time greats.
Yeah, yeah.
not just kind of in his draftsmanship, but also that kind of ability to convey something without words.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
there is something else happening under the surface when you're reading his books. I think I saw you funny way. You said you've read Poochie Town like 3 times in a row.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, we're going to talk about it at the end. I might ask you actually to jump in because it's clear. I read it because one of the reasons I read it for today was I knew you were coming on, and there's a comparison to be made. So we'll probably talk about that in the recommends. I might get you to jump in because I'm going to talk a little bit about him because he's a really interesting character as well, isn't he? You know,
very interesting. Yeah.
What, anyone else at all? Or
I like all the kind of 90s Fantagraphics kind of artists, Charles Burns, the Hernandez Bros.
Yeah.
I always like that kind of artwork that, how can you put it? You know, you look at it and it almost looks like impossible. How did somebody draw something this good?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I try a lot of stuff like old sort of album covers and things like that. There's something that some of your artwork reminds me of stuff I'd see on like an old vinyl album sleeve. Do you know what I mean?
Especially the new issue. Yeah, especially that one. Yeah. There's a psychedelic element to your work as well, isn't there? That's, you know,
For sure. I mean, I guess I'd be thinking of people like the underground comic artists like Chrome and stuff. It's all that kind of pulling together. It's the stuff I was reading as a teenager, really. But it's all had an influence.
Mary Fleener. Have you heard of her?
No, I haven't actually.
She does a sort of cubist kind of style, which isn't looking at the cover of A Man. It's not dissimilar to that.
Yeah.
There's a certain mesh of images that you know, a sort of melange of images almost, isn't there? They're all on top of each other.
Yeah, sure.
Nice use of the word melange.
Thank you. The spice. But it's, for those that haven't seen it, it's a mostly red cover with these sort of really sort of sinister, big-eyed worker people crowding around Om, and everything is red apart from his little psychedelic Casper face sticking out, you know. It's really striking, man, and I like the way you did it, almost like a wraparound. So it does have that quality of being an album cover, doesn't it, in the way you wrap around.
I was thinking of that thing of like, you don't need to have text on the front of this, and kind of, you know, if you were just to read this as a new reader, there are no words, nothing's explained, and then you maybe get to the back and there's a bit about the title, etc.
Do you ever get people like prodding you and going, what's this mean? And
I get that quite a lot. I mean, I'd say the two biggest questions I get are, what does this mean, and why are the nipples so big? the nipples do seem to get bigger each issue I do. Don't ask me why.
Do you think that's a reaction to the amount of times you ask the question? You're like, well, if they're going to ask me, then I'm going to draw bigger on the next one.
Yeah, Om is just going to be a giant nipple with legs at the end of this. But I think people do ask me a lot what they mean.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in what they read into it. You see what I mean? I don't want people to be reading a comic going, oh, this is about Andy's experience with what such and such.
Yeah.
That's in the back of their mind. I want them to put their own interpretation onto it.
Yeah, I mean, knowing that you're a Geordie and there's a sort of a vague industrialization theme running through the new book, I did actually think, is this a bit about Newcastle? You know, it's like...
Maybe, but I think that's it. Again, like, I'll be writing these things and sometimes it reveals things that are kind of in your subconscious a bit. I've written a story and go, shit, is that what I actually think about that subject? You know, so that's what I mean with Om being like, it's a vehicle for me to kind of work things out.
Yeah. Right. Nice.
In terms of like creating this universe, I mean, obviously you had Om, he's always been in your head, but you create like a complete universe of like weird, wonderful and colourful different characters, like some sinister, some just strange. When it comes to their creation, are they something that you've got sketchbooks with doodles in, or have you ever just created a creature when you've had the page in front of you and you just need something to fill that panel?
Oh, that's a good one. I'd say they tend to start in sketchbooks, and stories will often start from a character design. So did I send you guys Sutra?
Yes.
It had a story called The Law.
Right.
With those black figures who surround him.
Yes.
I actually just drew that character. It was at LCAF about 2 years ago. And I just drew it in my sketchbook. And there was just something about that character that suggested that story. So it tends to be kind of, as I was saying earlier, it's the character, how they move. It'll suggest a narrative. That sounds a bit confusing, but
yeah,
that tends to be the way it works.
That was the one story that really brought to mind to me, like, you know, when I mentioned like old animation and things like that. Yeah, you know, when you would see an old cartoon and you think it'd be all light and airy, and then something really sinister would happen in it. You know, you have these devilish demonic
figures. They'll shoot each other and they'll shoot holes in each other. There's sort of thing going on, isn't there?
And I just thought that this really, because those characters as well, because they have the big eyes and, you know, the way they're designed and stuff, and yet they've got these hammers and these spears, and, you know, as the story goes on, they just get worse and worse and worse.
And like those old cartoons, I actually found them as a kid. I actually found them a tiny bit, like, not scary, but strange and uncomfortable.
They can be. They can be scary, those sort of images, can't they? And stick with you, you know. Do you think maybe those sort of characters, you know, you had something in your head that you thought, oh, well, you know, this creeped me out, and then all of a sudden it's on the page in front of you?
Yeah, I mean, I've read some old... Fantagraphics did a reprint of some really old Disney comics, Mickey Mouse comics. And I think they're called the Blot, or like the Phantom, and he's kind of this black shadow character that's kind of chasing Mickey through the strips. So there's probably something, you read these things, you pick them up, and then they come out in your own way. But again, as I say, most of the stories will start with the character design. And also, I should say that the characters kind of have quite strong personalities to me, so it makes sense when a certain character should appear in a certain comic.
Right. Do you have like lots of notes, or is it? Are you a visual sort of note maker in terms of like drawing rather than like writing paragraphs?
Definitely. So a lot of sketches. I actually write kind of through drawn, if that makes sense. I tend to work with a big stack of printer paper next to me, and I'll just be making really rough sketches of where the story could go. I don't write down bullet points or anything like that.
So you rough it rather than write it.
Really rough though.
Well, this leads into the talking point that we briefly mentioned before. We haven't really talked about wordless storytelling. I always want to say silent, but of course it's not a fucking audio medium. But you know, these wordless comics, it takes a lot to sort of, you know, I think they're one of the most difficult sort of comics to write. And how to figure that out, and the pacing and everything. And obviously, all of your books have no words in them. So do you literally, are you making little mock-ups? Are you writing, much like you say there, it's not words on a page, you're working out panels and then piecing it together like a jigsaw kind of thing?
That's it, yeah. I was thinking about this earlier because I thought this might come up, but... I often think you've got to try and plan like the rhythm of a story. So when I started out doing these books, I think the first comics I did were about 6 pages long, which is nothing. There's not really that much space to do much. But you're still trying to work out where is the kind of going to be the point of tension in the story. Where's the story going to be? You know, have you got an introduction in the story? So you can kind of plot the basic rhythm of where the story's going to go. And then it's about joining the dots in between. You've got your beginning and end, got a rough idea of the middle. How are you actually going to keep the reader interested in between those points?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course.
And obviously, with a short story as well, we've said this many times before, it's a real skill to, you know, I heard once that you should be able to tell any tale, beginning, middle, end, you should be able to tell it in 4 pages. You know,
it's the great 2000 AD quote, isn't it?
That's the art of a good writer. And that's really tricky. And have you found, like, you started with those shorts, but did you find that your sort of way of storytelling, you like to pace things out a bit more, you like to take your time with pages, and therefore the story's got bigger like that?
I think with a short wordless comic, a reader's going to probably read it in about a minute and a half, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I want people to be able to sink into the story a bit more, so doing 24 pages gives them that ability. Yeah. But I also think with the shorter comics that I was doing, I remember I had a big challenge at the beginning of how do you introduce people into this story? What's the setup? And I think it was the story I did called Hoss, which is in Mantra. You just threw the reader into the story. There didn't need to be an introduction. You just cut out the beginning almost. So you can play around with things like that depending on the form of the story. I think with the longer form stories, you get more time to stretch things out.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I haven't really thought about it before, but you're absolutely right about short stories. If there's no words to them, it's just, they're almost like, it's just a collection of prints, isn't it, really?
But for somebody who doesn't, and I know you said there's no words in the comic, but there's very few words in it at all.
Yeah.
So it's not like you've written, oh, I need to get it out of my system, I'll write an introduction page, or write, you know, we'll have a letters page or something.
That's something I'd kind of be interested to try. But also, I like that idea of, you're saying earlier, it's a bit weird. It's supposed to be a bit odd.
Yeah, that's the idea. That's why we like it. Yeah.
I don't want to give the reader too much explanation of what this is. It's like a weird little alien artifact they've picked up.
Yeah, that's why I like it so much, man. Yeah. I think you can over-explain stuff sometimes. You know, you really can. Sure. Yeah. I like the fact that I think people should maybe send videos into you of what they think about it, but do it in the form of mime. I'd like to see that. And then you can just have your own YouTube channel.
Yeah.
It's funny because at LCAF last weekend, there was a woman came on. She read the whole book, a man in front of me, and she asked me what it meant. And then she came up with this whole theory about what it meant to her.
Okay. Like,
that's more interesting to me. Yeah. You know, she sees the main character, Orm, as a woman. I see it as a man, but like, open to interpretation.
Okay.
Yeah. Did she buy it?
Yeah, that's the thing. Right.
She didn't buy it, I'm afraid.
But, you know, they read the book at the table, then they don't buy it.
That sucks.
It was the only one like that the whole weekend. So
we had a couple, actually.
Yeah, but is that something, because of the nature of your books, that you struggle with a bit more than a lot of other people, because people could just have a flick through and then,
I did see a few people who had turned at the very last page, and I'd be like, it's totally visual, you know, you've got to ruin the ending if you do that.
I have to warn people about the last Hilda book as well around that. I said, don't look at the last page.
It was a mixed one, really, but
the other thing I noticed on your book, on the back cover, is you've recommended a track to listen to whilst reading it.
Yeah, that was my brother's idea. I showed my brother the book when it was about ready to go to print. And he just, it's the old Alton Towers theme. I think it used to be on the advert, like, when I was growing up. And it just had that extra kind of, like, you know, Fantasia, Sorcerer's Apprentice style mood to it. So you're saying, like, referencing those old style animations.
Yeah.
Well, just be a bit of a game, really. You could try and add a soundtrack to a comic.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea, especially with your work, because you're not concentrating on, you know, heavy dialogue or narration or anything like that. You know, you can play with what you're doing then, can't you?
Yeah,
because I think you do see sometimes comics sort of say, you know, listen to this song while you're reading it. But, you know, and it'll just be like a pop track or something from a David Bowie album or something like that.
Yeah.
But if it's got words in it and you're trying to read a comic at the same time, it's Whereas that whole sort of, I think it's great what you've done, because it builds the atmosphere of the reading experience.
But you've got to be careful with that as well, Andy, I think, because your book is a strange book. It could almost be seen as a tiny bit disturbing. But in it,
so what you're saying is he wants tracks like Cleopatra Coming At You. Is that what
you're saying? If you put something too creepy on it, it's gonna, like, I don't think I could read Jim Woodring whilst listening to the Ring of the Nibelung. I think it would, like, freak me the fuck out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like
it's a weird one as well, because people have different associations with different music. So one person might get one from someone to get something else.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, it was a bit of a risk, but I thought I'll try it for this book and then see what I do with the next one.
With Spotify, people can do that stuff now, can't they?
Of course.
So, where's the inspiration for the titles of each of the books come from then, for this world?
So what have I got? Tantra, Mantra, Sutra. They're all kind of like Hindu, Buddhist terms, but I'm not a Hindu or a Buddhist. They're just words that I think are kind of interesting.
I think when you contacted me and said, can I send you the book, you know, years ago now, I thought, is this like a yoga thing?
Yeah, well, that's kind of how would I put this? It's kind of my, I've read into some of those kind of things, but it's more my kind of response to them. I'm not trying to make a textbook about Hinduism or Buddhism.
Yeah. Yeah,
do you know what I mean? I think there's a different market for that kind of stuff. But also, I kind of like the word Om, because I think it can either be a kind of cartoonish nothingness word, or it's a Hindu syllable with a massive amount of meaning attached to it.
Yeah, and it gives that moment of concentration.
Yeah,
implication sometimes.
Yes,
you know?
I think it's kind of like you might look at the books and think it's very surface level cartoon, but I hope there's something else going on within it.
Because the previous books are quite I'm going to say probably slightly more psychedelic in certain aspects, aren't they? There's a lot more at moments. There's like big bursts of stuff, big bursts of color and stuff, aren't there?
Definitely. And I think the latest book I've done is Risograph, which is obviously looks quite stylistically different from the other books.
Yeah, I was going to ask about your art process and stuff, because that one's very heavily sort of red and blue, you know, just it just really hits you in the face straight away and creates its own sort of atmosphere. Have you tried different art processes for each book?
So I think on Sutra was the first book that I started working with a brush and ink. I used to just work with fine liners and then go on Photoshop and add colour. I was never really that satisfied with the finished artwork. So I tried to move on with brushwork. Obviously, I've done two risograph books now. I've also done some wooden sculptures.
We were going to get onto your little theatre of on.
Do you want to talk about those later?
Firstly, for those who don't necessarily, what is a risograph?
So risograph is just a method of printing. A risograph machine looks a lot like a photocopier. You build the colour up in layers. So if anyone's familiar with screen printing, it's kind of a similar concept. So you could have a 5-colour risograph comic. You could have a 1-colour or have a 2. And the great thing about risograph is you can't actually mix colours together. So if you overprint a red and a blue, you'll get a purple. So it's just got a really nice tactile quality.
It's very popular at the moment as well, isn't it? Yeah. I say not popular. It's seen as like a quality thing to do at the moment, isn't it?
I think it is, and I think I've done digital prints before, but I think the risograph just has something a bit more high quality.
The colour seems to have sunk into the paper a bit more. Maybe there's a tactile thing to it, isn't there? I think.
Yeah, and I think also just from like a colour point of view, it's sometimes quite good to be restricted with colours because as you seen from my earlier books, I just throw every colour that I want to on a page. But with risograph, you might only have 2 colours to work with, and it kind of changes your judgment on what you're putting on the page.
Yeah, it works for Darwin Cook, let's face it. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I know what you mean. Yeah, you're right. It allows you to stretch in other ways, doesn't it? You know?
Yeah, definitely. So
do you work, so have you done any sort of digital, just straight digital work?
No, but after doing my last book, I kind of feel like I should get into doing that because it was so my method is so time consuming. I still just draw by hand with pencils and then go over with ink and then scan it in. So I might try doing some straight into the computer stuff next time.
All right, granddad.
It's rich coming from him, isn't it?
I don't even understand what a computer is.
So anyway, we're talking about like the die cut, the diorama sort of stuff.
Yes, yeah. You're famous for this, man. I remember someone referring to me to you. I said, "Oh, is Andy here? Andy Barron?" And he went, "Is he the diorama guy?" Somebody's literally said that to me once.
That's good to know. These are. I started doing these maybe 2-3 years ago.
Yeah.
I use a laser cutting machine, so you have to draw the artwork in Illustrator. And then, have you ever used one of these before?
No.
Basically, you can kind of make it so the machine either cuts through a sheet of MDF or it will etch into the sheet. So you can do like a lot with this. And I'd actually come off the back of doing my book Tantra, which took me twice as long as I wanted it to. It was a bit of a headache to make. And I wanted to do something that was not drawn comics, but I still wanted to work in this world. So I made a little diorama, which was a 3-panel comic. It's called The Lamp. So Om finds a genie's lamp and the genie comes out, you know, offers him a wish. But it was told with dioramas. And that was just, for me, like a really nice break from drawing comics, which it sounds daft to say, but making a comic out of hand-painted wood was actually quicker than drawing a comic for me at that point. So, it was quite fun to do.
But it's nice for the table as well. It's like really different.
That's exactly it. And, you know, we were talking about LCAF earlier. You go to these shows, everyone's got brilliant artwork. It's quite difficult to know what to look at. And there was definitely a thing where I thought, well, people might be attracted to come and look at these and then pick up a book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're like little theatres. They're like little stages set in a sort of like a half a box almost, isn't it? You know, and you look into it and the characters are sort of acting out a scene within. It's kind of like kids used to do this as like a little theatre, didn't they, at school? It was almost that sort of thing. Obviously,
that's
You know, but yeah, no, and they're really fun. Well, the only thing is it does take you a while to set up. I did watch you setting it up on Friday.
Well, they always break when I'm carrying the convention, so I have to bring it to every time I go. But yeah, so I did a book called Sutra where I tried to make comics out of the photos of the dioramas.
Yeah,
I noticed that. Well, but it was an experiment.
Mm.
But I'd like to do a few more of those, really, because I think they're a lot of fun to work on and they're a nice thing to keep afterwards.
Yeah. Have you ever done an exhibition with your work at all or anything like that? I can see it going down well.
Yeah, so thank you. I haven't tried that, but certainly open to trying more things.
If there's anyone out there listening who likes putting on comic book sort of exhibitions and stuff, of which there are like more and more. We're seeing more artwork and of like sequential
pages.
Well,
the Cartoon Museum's just opening up, isn't it, again? And yeah, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So yeah, and I wish more of it was in my sort of area. It's a bit bit of a trek. I know you guys, Cartoon Museum.
You get the odd thing in Bristol, don't you? I suppose.
Yeah.
I've got to go to that manga one. That looks fantastic.
Me too. I haven't been there yet.
What's that one for those?
The British Museum have got a big manga exhibition on.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How long is that going for?
I think it's until September.
Yeah.
I tried to go there yesterday, and the line, they've got that a special sort of thing set up so that where the line snakes backwards and forwards.
Mm. I'd say the Horton pen.
Yeah, it was so, I just couldn't bear to go and stand in it. Yeah.
I mean, that is a genre of comics that we still haven't. You know,
we haven't done an
episode focused on it, and I'm sure we'll do a couple in the future because there's a few of our guests that are certainly we can call them experts and these sort of things. But that's just another world, isn't it, in terms of popularity and how big, and it's just
Well, Paul Gravett is the one who curated it, as I understand, because he popped by the table and was chatting about it at LCAF. Yeah, it's big deal, man. It's a lot of money been thrown into that, and I'm trying to remember the name. There's also a sort of a parallel exhibition going on about another manga artist, which they talk about on the Orbiting Pod that got released today.
It's a Japan house in Kent?
That's right. That's where it is. Yeah. Yeah, so there's a couple going on at the moment. It's getting a real resurgence, you know?
Nice. So we'll try and find them and put them in the show notes for those who those of you out there who don't know about them, because I certainly didn't know these things were happening. So.
Oh, so this is manga, the art of Urasawa Naoki?
That's the one. Yeah. Paul from Orbital interviewed him the other day. Paul and Liz. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's well worth a look.
Nice.
Oh, nice one.
Nice. And yeah, just people should just check out Andy's work anyway. It's
definitely
it's brilliant stuff.
Yeah.
So when's the next book then?
I'll try and sell the ones I've got first.
Yeah.
I think I'll probably aim to do another one next year. I don't know. Maybe put out a few smaller ones.
Yeah, what's your convention sort of schedule like?
Got a bit smaller this year, so I'm only actually LCAP was the only one I've signed up for.
Mm.
Okay,
is that by choice? I know there's a lot of people certainly that are cutting back and being more selective on conventions.
Yeah, I do feel like a lot of the smaller ones are starting to kind of close up over the last year or so.
Yeah,
yeah, Crouch End's gone, isn't it? Safari, I don't think that's appeared this year.
I don't think that's happening. But when I started off, I was doing things like Comiket. I don't know if that exists anymore.
Well, that's the beautiful moment where me and Vince first met.
Oh, right. It was when Harry met Sally, wasn't it?
Yeah.
although doing a fake orgasm in the British Library was a bit inappropriate.
Yeah, the top of the escalator, turn right. Yeah, fake orgasm. That was Paul Gravett who used to run that. I was a volunteer.
Kind of got this narrower each year that I've been doing these, but. I'm always on the keep my eye open for ones to do. Good ones.
Yeah.
But it is, I think, you know, some of them are sort of disappearing or dying away, or maybe just having a break for a year. But it's heartening to know that, you know, shows like LCAF and there's some other ones we're going to talk about later that are happening later in the year that are healthier than ever. And just, you know, and the audience is still there and still growing all the time, which I think is brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, LCAF was really heartening, man. It was really, you know, we've had a few quiet conventions, haven't we? Yeah. A few of the big ones have been quite quiet recently, over the last few years, I suppose. But it was nice to see so many people there, you know, and yeah, putting their hand in their pocket, you know, which is great.
Yeah. So, yeah, so where can people look for you this year, Andy, at conventions?
nowhere at the moment, but I have got a website if they want to check out my work. It's andyillustrates.com.
Cool.
There you go. And you'll get his Twitter and stuff at the end of the show. He's sticking with us. You know, he's a glutton for punishment. And now he's got to sit through our shout outs. What shout outs do we have this week, gents?
I've got a shitload.
Oh God, here we go. Dan, do you have any?
I've only got the one.
Oh, go on then, Dan.
Then do it, and I know what it's going to be, and it's brilliant.
It's completely self-serving. It's for the Kickstarter.
Yes.
Me and Sam are doing for Project Hoax.
Yes, I've backed it.
Oh,
yes.
Nice one. Thank you.
As have I.
It's done very well. It's we nearly reached the target, and it's only sort of we'll be 7 days in when you hear this.
And it's not a small target either. Is it 1,200 you've gone for?
Yeah.
And it's almost there, isn't it, after a couple of days. Very good, man. Yeah. Better start preparing yourself for some stretch goals, my friend.
Yeah.
I know, like this, the stretch goals where I do like bits of art for various bits and bobs, and like most of them are gone. So it's like bloody hell. So I've got like about 5 or 6 commissions. I was going to actually ask on that. Do you do the commissions while you're putting the book together, or do you leave it till the end? I don't know.
Well, they go out at the same time, don't they?
So fair enough.
Yeah.
You manage your...
This is how I would schedule it. I'd get the book done, and then while it's off being proofed and ready for print or whatever,
that's true.
Use that time to do the commissions and stuff. That's how I would
do it. Good shout there. But,
and I love how you're being, I can tell, we know Dan, and he's being so timid and being like, well, yeah, that it's doing quite well and stuff, because he's humble. He's a very humble man. and you know, me and Tony can say that the Kickstarter looks fucking great and the book's going to be fucking awesome.
So you
should go and pledge. It's going to smash it in the next couple of days, dude. Don't worry.
Thanks everyone who's backed it. I'm going to be pouring my heart and soul into the artwork.
And it's got stuff.
It's already well on the way.
I didn't expect there was going to be on there, like, you know, the USB drives and you know your commission,
because
you're not just doing normal commissions, are you? What are the commissions you're doing for it?
Naked ones.
It's basically I've made a template up for an old Mega Drive game cover.
Yeah,
so it'd be making you a video game of whatever you wanted. So it could be you, your comic, your favorite film, whatever you want to do.
Maybe if you like the show, location.
Yeah, location, the 16-bit video game.
I like that series, Botched, on the E channel. That's good.
I'm not aware of that one.
Oh, what's that one? That's good. Botched Plastic Surgery.
Oh, okay. Christ almighty. Not one to watch while you're eating your dinner.
And especially after that experience I had, Catfish. That's a good series.
yes. So, yeah, but check out the Kickstarter, folks, because, you know. More work.
Yeah, cheers.
More work by Dan Butcher. That's what everyone wants.
Yeah, that's what we all
that's
want.
That's what I'll be doing.
Yeah, Tony, you've got a few, haven't you?
Yeah, so Actors is now on Kickstarter from Stuart McCune, which I'm sure will have made its money by now. But it's really good. It's got a very creepy video, which is just worth watching. Really good. Obviously, the double act, the new Starsky and Hutch of comics, Nick Prolix and Russell Mark Olsen.
Yeah.
Or as I like to call him, RMO, when I talk to him. They've done a flip novel book, which is The Accumulator on one side and The Dickie Bird Song on the other. And that's on Kickstarter, also fully funded, but you'll need a copy of this, I tell you now. I'm going to be at MacPow, which is the comic convention, the free comic convention in the town hall in Macclesfield. I'll be there on Saturday, and it runs between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. I'm looking forward to meeting Nicole and Ian, actually, from the Lakes podcast. I've never met them face to face.
Nice.
So looking forward to seeing them. The following weekend, Saturday the 29th, is Glasgow Comic Con, which is the Royal Concert Hall in Glasgow, between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. 6:30 p.m. rather. I'm going to be there as well. Attending it is going to be Chip Zdarsky, which is quite a coup. Frank Quietly, Brian Stelfreeze. I'm really looking forward to meeting him. And show favourite.
I fucking love Stelfreeze's work.
It's good, isn't he? Yeah, he looks like a really cool guy as well.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to seeing him. And show favourite, Ian Kennedy. Is going to be there as well.
Oh, awesome.
That's going to be nice. I also recorded an episode of The Nerds Who Haunted Themselves with Mr. Mulrain this week. We did a sort of, he's doing like an experiment in just posing the question, why comics? And I ended up talking for about an hour and a half, which is quite restrained
classic,
of me.
Classic
time. Yeah. Yeah. So have a listen to that one. That should be fun. I think I swear a bit as well. So that's always fun, isn't it? It's always adult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. They're my ones. Vincenzo, you've got a big one. Bring out the big guns, my friend.
Well, we mentioned it last week, but I'm going to be mentioning it pretty much every day online until it happens. I've never done a Kickstarter campaign, but I'm practicing by getting my promo hat on for, yes, the second BAM Comic Art and Zine Fair, which is taking place in Bath Saturday the 13th of July at the Comedia Club in Bath, in Westgate Street, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Absolutely free entry. So, you know, if you're in the area, Bristol, Cardiff, wherever, it's just a quick trip on the train. Go to Bath. I mean,
you can have it. Nice. I like Bath.
It's a lovely place to have the day. Plus, you can walk in, and seriously, folks, there is a growing list of amazing creators. We've got loads on there. I've started a new blog, bamcomicfair.blogspot.com, where we're announcing all the sort of artists that are exhibiting. The likes of No Brow are going to be there.
Yeah, I'll be there. Yeah, we've got all our new books. We've got some new stuff coming. There'll be a few little, I've got a few little freebies, Hilda freebies, if you pop down as well.
Oh, nice. And speaking of freebies, John Tucker, our pal John Tucker, he just threw together, you know how he does. I don't know where he finds it.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That's great. Yeah.
He just threw together a sort of like a makeshift sort of little poster for the event, which is funny in itself. And anyone who knows John's work know that there's a dark bit of humour in there. Involving
he loves brains, doesn't he?
Yes.
He loves a bit of brains.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
And there's a sniper involved.
He loves snipers as well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Secretly a sniper, isn't he?
I think he is. Yeah. And he's always.
That's the lighthouse one's got the sniper in, hasn't it?
Yeah, isn't it? After he catches him dumping pubic hair.
Yep. But he's created this poster. Not only that, but there's going to be 100 copies of it that we're just going to give away to the first 100 people that are through the door on the day.
Nice.
So you can get a free poster. You can go to John's table, get him to devalue it by signing it.
Essentially a comic on a poster, which he's got previous for, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is.
Yeah. But not only that, you know, we've got loads of great guests. I mean, and you've got Mike Garley, Steve Sims, Sarah Millman, as we said, John Tucker, Jason Garatley,
Garatley, is it?
Garatley, yeah. He's going to be there. Emma Haynes. There's lots of local artists and people travel from beyond. We previously mentioned Nick Prolix and Russell Mark Olson are going to be there as well.
Oh, they're going to be there.
Yeah.
Wow,
we haven't announced those yet, but they're going to be announced very soon. So over the next couple of weeks, if you go to bamcomicfair.blogspot.com, where I'm posting up pretty much daily announcements about things and trying to get as many people through the door as I can, because it is an indie event that, I got to say, Rachel Lee Carter has been an absolute star setting this up. So now I've necked the energy drink of promotion, and I'm going to be shouting it.
She took a picture of you and sent it to me the other day where you were drinking a fancy coffee with her.
Actually, it wasn't like a fancy coffee. Very... It was a big hot chocolate with marshmallows in. That's all I've got to say.
Fucking corporate. He's changing us, Dan. He's changing.
Also appearing is going to be that bloke who's going to talk to you for an hour, Vince.
Well, no, I might try doing a thing where people can actually get commissions from me on the day, so and then I've got an excuse to put my head down and ignore everyone.
I wonder if that bloke is going to turn up looking like Hair Flick and read all the comics on the table wearing fucking leather gloves like he did last year as well.
I wonder, because that's quite a thing to do, isn't it? Just read through all the comics. Yeah. I think that's really... really off.
He kept picking up going, tell me about this one. And by about the fourth one, I mate, fuck it, mate, leave it. I'm not going to tell you.
I think the James McCulloch approach, like,
that's
you
when you need James McCulloch around. You always need James McCulloch around.
You need a 6'8" Scotchman, don't you, just to batter them.
Really say that you're going to read something? Or are you going to buy something?
You're going to fucking buy something. What? I think it's a phrase.
Buy something. What?
Oh, dear.
You can't say that at El Cap, can you, Andy? That wouldn't go.
That would have been amazing.
Press the fire alarm, it'll run out.
I feel like the crowd that would go in to get comics wouldn't be the kind of crowd that would kick off if you said something like that to them.
Yeah,
I think you'd be right, wouldn't you? Yeah.
Could be wrong, but... Yeah.
You wouldn't get glassed, would you? Let's face it.
So there you go, folks. There's loads of great events and comic campaigns for you to check out. So I've got to do some work on the show notes today.
Yes.
Thankfully, I've got tomorrow off to do a bit of editing. So.
Hey, nice. What's
going on with you?
Hey, well, you know, it's my birthday on Tuesday, isn't it? So, you know,
I've sent you a present already.
I know, and it's lovely. Thank you for that, Tony. We'll talk about that.
I ordered a present and I realised you could put the day that it's going to get delivered on. We're living in the future.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. I don't want a present turning up the day before because Vince would open it in a hurried excitement and he's got to hold it back.
You always know when it's addressed to you for me because I put Vincenzo.
I know. Yeah, I know. And I'm both excited and worried. So, yeah. No, but yeah. Thank you for those dudes. And what actually was my recommendation, which is going to be one that I got through the post.
Nice.
Actually, which I showed you. I think I sent a picture to you guys, didn't I? About it.
Did you?
We'll talk about it in
a
second.
You sent me a lot of pictures.
That's true. Sometimes you've got to scroll down because it's...
The subtext of what we're saying here is if you listen to this show on Monday, you can Amazon Prime something to Vince. You'll get it on his birthday.
Dude, so, no.
Please do.
No, I'm not giving out my address to everyone.
Yeah, let's calm down. If it's why not just on Tuesday, you send Vince a really happy selfie of yourself.
Yeah, how happy?
let's just say you can't see the face, but you can tell they're pleased.
No, Tony. I mean, stop sending me those pictures, man.
Well, I was going to say, Vince, that's what you told me to say before we came on about the Amazon thing.
Yeah. Don't play it down, Vince, you liar.
What did you get for your birthday, Vince? Thrown under the bus by my mates.
Same as last year, then.
Oh, dear. But enough about me getting older. We've got to talk about comics. It's the time of the show where we're going to recommend some stuff.
Yes.
Who wants to go first?
Do you two guys want to go first, and then me and I'll start, and Andy can join in on my one? Because he loves this geezer.
All right.
Do that.
Dan, do you want to take it away?
Yes. Let me just get everything to... we got sent in a book to the pod.
Yes.
Email on the Facebooks. And while I desperately try and put the code in for this to read it, it's sent in by a Carl D. Smith. I have to look to see which part of which one of the creators he is. But we got sent in a comic called Radical Rain. R-A-Y-N-E. And the artists on it is... Oh, the story's by Carl D. Smith. Sketched and inked by Jewel Frigeri. And coloured by Demetrius M. That name rings a bell. And letters by Jerome Gagnon. And I've got to say, this is absolutely fantastic. Just on
awesome.
Art wise is just, I think we all looked at it and thought, bloody hell, this is
I think we all said, like, art looks nice, I must read this. Is when when it came in, didn't we?
It's absolutely like pro level. It's really well done. Essentially, it's kind of like a revenge romp where the character in question kind of has Saint robbed from her. And she goes about putting together a team of people to kind of help her get revenge. It's really well done, so accomplished and put together. I would be interested in seeing where the whole thing goes from here. It's, very impressive. It's one of the best things about kind of doing the small press and indie stuff. These comics have come out of the blue and you think, well, where were these guys been hiding? And then they put together something which is just so complete and well done. I was very impressed. Yeah.
It reminds me, there's a touch of the Reckless Heroes about it when I first opened it. It's got that sort of bold, big guns thing going on, you know. The female character in it is really well drawn, I've got to tell you. There's one shot I'm just looking at here where she's chatting to someone down the end of a really long table, and it works from a sort of narrative point of view. It works perfectly.
Mm.
Yeah, I really like that sort of thing.
It's hard to just kind of describe the art style because when I looked at the credits and the Juan who does the artwork is sketched and inked, and you will get kind of like a sketchy quality to it because there's some of the lines you can see there's like a kind of some of the pencil lines are still there. And when in other work that's kind of maybe bothered me, in this it's not because it feels like there's a hand-drawn element, but you got the cleanness of like inks over the top.
Yeah, and it's not overly clean, is it? Which I kind of like.
Yeah,
I like a bit of character to the line, and this has got that, I think.
It's
not animation, put it that way, you know.
Yeah, sometimes, like, when some comic stars, I prefer it when you get a bit of roughness to it and you see where people have kind of done their work. And in this, it's spot on. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And, the story's a belter as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think we're going to have to contact Carl and ask him where we can get this, because he sent in a review copy, but we don't actually have any means of... There's no social media links or.
Okay. Or no, I'm just scrolling through now. There's not even any on the comic, are there?
No. Okay. I mean, this is the review comic copy, so I don't think it's the finished article.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
We'll have to send a message to Carl and then ask him where people can get his comic from.
Yeah, I would say if he's sending it in through to the pod, then I suspect it will appear on Comic House at some point.
Yes.
Yeah. As well, maybe.
Nice.
That's a good shout.
Yeah, it's good. That's a good shout. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, my pick for this week is a New York Times bestseller. Cool, bloody hell. Oh. Didn't think I'd ever say that. yes. Gifted to me by my good friend Dan Chant. He goes, I buy you sort of a graphic novel or something every year, but I haven't bought you anything with anyone in spandex this year.
Yeah. I love this creator as well. I love it.
He picked the book Killing and Dying by Adrian, is it Tamin?
Tamin? I always say Tamin, yeah.
Tamin.
Yeah.
I have not heard of this one.
Not heard of this before. Completely out of the blue. I just had a quick flick through, and I immediately thought, oh, this could be quite interesting. There's no blurb on the book. This Killing and Dying is basically a collection of six of his stories. There's no like book info. Basically, it's one of the... Obviously, I'm not au fait with his work. Tony probably knows.
I think these are stories that have come from Optic Nerve, I think, which is his kind of... regular, it's not monthly by any stretch,
yeah,
you know, sort of his regular sort of comic release that is, you might get one in a year and it's got 50 pages in it, then you won't get one for, you know, I think they're from that,
yeah, and like it's covered in like sort of critical acclaim sort of quotations and testimonials.
It's like a desk, it's a table book at Gosh. It's that sort of quality.
And there's stories, you know, like Go Owls. Killing and Dying is actually one of the stories in it, which I think about stand-up comedy. But I've only read the first one, you know, so far, which is quite a complete story in itself, and that is Horticulpture.
Right?
Have you read this one?
Oh, maybe a while ago. I haven't got this collection, to be fair.
And it's basically about a landscape gardener who decides to become like a modern artist and create both art sculptures and living plants that people will buy.
This rings a bell.
And he thinks he's creating like a new art form, but he has difficulty selling that to the outside world. And like, it's basically the backwards and forwards of him and it's his long-suffering wife who's putting up with this ridiculous sort of idea that he's got. It's quite an interesting idea, but everyone, he's got like loads of these sculptures in his front garden that people are saying these are hideous. People are taking fun of them and making fun of them. And I had a quick flick through the book, but it was definitely one of those books immediately I thought, I've just got to sit down and start from page one. And I think that's the best way to read this kind of stuff. Do you know
what
I mean?
He's a great draftsman, man, isn't he?
Completely.
He knows what he's doing, doesn't he?
Yeah. Within the first sort of page, I noticed that these are broken down. A lot of these are like four panel strips. So I knew immediately it was a collection. Like you say, what did you say it was originally in? Tony?
I think it was from Optic Nerve. I know a lot of his collections tend to come from that.
Because they look like the sort of stuff you see in newspapers, you know, four panels with the little title in the top left corner, that kind of stuff. But the pacing of the storytelling, and very much because of that, you've got four panels and almost a joke. It's got that sort of the setup, the middle of the joke, and then there's always a punchline, even if it's an emotional punchline. And immediately, I was just, like you say, master draftsman. You know, he doesn't waste a line. Overly drafted. Some of these look, there's a sort of cartoonish, yet lifelike look to them. I'm an immediate fan of this. And I finished reading Horticulpture, which is both funny, heartwarming, frustrating, because the main guy is a bit of a dick. And there are moments. There's also like certain. It'll have these four panel ones, and then it'll break into like a page. Do you know what I mean? It's almost like,
okay,
you know, like a Calvin and Hobbes, where you get like the Calvin and Hobbes strips, and then all of a sudden you get a couple of actual full page strips,
which are like from the Sunday papers, aren't they? Normally, yeah. Like a longer
one. They're like full color, and they sort of really break it up. I wish I could say some lines in this, but some of them I think you just have to experience for yourself. His wife is getting frustrated. she's supporting him through no matter what, and you really do. At first, you're like behind him, and then after a while, you just feel sorry for, you know, just think, God, why are you with this bloke? And one time he snaps at her, and like, you know, and then the panels are, he basically feels sorry. He goes, I'm sorry, sweetie, I'm out of my mind. What kind of jackass snaps at his wife like that? Just do me a favor and never say that word again. And she goes, which word? Hortus, she gets halfway through the word of saying it, he goes, yes, that one, Jesus fucking Christ. He snaps at her again. And yeah, so there's a wonderful sort of humor.
It's very sharply observed, isn't it?
It's very much, it's really about people. And that's what I like.
Yeah, that's what it is. Absolutely. And a lot of his stories about that, you know, he writes women really well as well.
Yeah.
He does great stories about women. It's Drawn and Quarterly, isn't it? I think. Is that right?
This one is Faber and Faber. So like,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right,
I'm guessing you can get it, find it quite easily on Amazon.
Yeah, it's all over. You get it in bookshops.
Yeah.
It's
yeah. Like I say, this is a guy who's obviously, he must be making that big green if he's, you know, once you hit that sort of New York Times bestseller thing, people stop thinking that you're like a cartoonist, and then you become, they think you're something else, don't they?
Graphic novelist now, don't they?
Yeah.
It's he's normally with Drawn and Quarterly. I think a lot of his stuff comes out through them. Yeah. But it's that sort of crowd. It's the Drawn and Quarterly, Fantagraphics kind of crowd he's with, you know?
Yeah. But it's beautiful stuff, and I like it that all the different stories, there's six stories in this, and they're all different tone, colours. He mixes it up with different stories, which I like. He's not just doing the same thing each time. The book did make me feel stupid, though. The last thing I'll say about this, because not because the stories are inside above me, but you know when a book is covered in like testimonials and like, you know, someone from The Guardian or something like this. Well, Rachel Cook from the Observer, and this is I'm gonna feel stupid because I bet Tony will know exactly who I'm talking about. Rachel Cook said, if I had to describe Adrian Tamine to someone who didn't know his work, I would call him, and I can't possibly conjure any higher praise, the Alice Munro of comics.
No.
And I didn't know what she was talking about.
God,
I'm really stupid as well. Yeah. And Andy, do you know that is?
No, I've drawn a blank there as well.
Yeah.
I just feel thick.
Shall I Google Alice Munro while we're talking? Because we might know who it is and we just don't realise.
The Alice Munro of comics. So obviously, I guess she doesn't do comics.
She said, "Mary
short
Alice
story Moore. Writer."
Yeah.
Ah, right. Okay.
Canadian short story writer, and that's strange because I'm normally all over the female Canadian short story writers list.
That's true.
Oh, she did win a Nobel Prize there. About
compelling parallels between nature and human nature.
She revolutionised the architecture of short stories.
Will you two stop being highbrow? For just
what
five
reading
seconds.
Off Wikipedia?
Yeah,
because we didn't know someone.
No, well, the Observer can blow me because that's ridiculous.
That is nonsense. That's one of those quotes that are like, oh well, you know, if that, you know, don't worry, it's not a comic, it's a graphic novel, you know, it's not a cartoon. It's
a short story writer. It doesn't do comics. Leave my house.
Yeah. You look at this, and it's great. Like storytelling, cartooning, and graphic storytelling. That's all you need to know. And I'm going to enjoy reading the rest of this because it's absolutely bloody great.
Yeah, no, so. I think you'll like that, man. There's a depth to his work as well. There's loads of other stuff you can buy as well. You know, I think you're down that rabbit hole, man. You're down the Drawn and Quarterly Fantagraphics rabbit hole. It's going to swallow you up.
I know.
Yeah.
Lord
not
knows.
Cheap, those books.
I'll be wearing corduroys in no time.
Yeah, you'll be at El Caf with your printed Lenore bottle.
Yep. I'll have I was trying a flat cap and a soy latte. I don't know what I'm talking about.
You'll be DJing French new wave jazz.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of new wave jazz, Tony, do you want to take it?
Yeah. So I've become I've always been aware of this creator, and I just in the last 12 hours I've been totally obsessed with him. It's Jim Woodring. I know you have, Andy, but Vincent Dan, have you ever read his work?
I've never read his work, but certainly you sent us some pictures of it, and immediately I knew it, which speaks volumes.
Yeah,
I think
it does, doesn't it? It's got and it's weird that you were talking about that old school animation style, because there is the element of, you know, in his work of this old school animation, but dipped in LSD. You know, it's like Mickey. He's got Mickey. Frank's one of, we'll talk a bit about his characters, but Frank's one of his central characters, who is this strange animal. You can't quite put your foot on whether he's a mouse or a cat or a dog or whatever he is, but he's got kind of Mickey Mouse gloves when creatures aren't chewing his arms off and stuff like that. You know,
you can find a video on YouTube. I think it's called Binky's Initiation.
Oh, this is the Japanese animation.
One of those old Stuart School animations. And I know Jim Woodring said it was a massive influence on these Frank stories. So if you just put Binky's Initiation in the YouTube, you watch that old clip. And you kind of see that relationship between them.
Yeah, and it's kind of... there is that. So there's that element. And if you kind of keep that element in mind, and then... The bit about the history of Woodring very quickly is he's a 66-year-old California-based cartoonist and painter. His origins come from he worked in Saturday morning cartoons with a fairly bitter Jack Kirby and a fairly bitter Gil Kane, who sort of took him under their wing and taught him stuff. But he's quite vocal saying, I saw an interview with him today on Canadian television, and he was quite vocal in saying that's probably the worst experience he's ever had in his life was working in this animation studio. He just found it sort of soul destroying, and it just sort of sucked his life away to such a point where he left the animation studio, left drawing, and became an alcoholic bin man for about 8 years after that, you know. But since he was a kid, he's been having hallucinations. And he talks quite openly about these hallucinations that he has. He's not having many now, but he certainly visualizes stuff that isn't there. Almost from a sort of pseudo medical ailment. Do you know what I mean? It's almost that bad. Hmm. And he turns a lot of this stuff into his comics. I got turned onto it. I've always been aware of his work, and I've always seen his work. And like you say, Vince, there's... You know it as soon as you see it. You know there's this guy there in Woodring, and you know I've read the odd sort of pages here and there of his stuff. But I was out with Fingerman, and Bob Fingerman was saying to me that he was in, I think it went something along the lines, he was in a cartoon museum in LA, and they'd asked all the creators to go in the toilet and draw on the walls, you know, as per the CBGB's toilets were sort of famous for having like these sort of scrawled on walls. They wanted a similar vibe in the toilets. And he said, and there I was, drawing on the wall with Jim Woodring. I thought, oh my God. And I said to him, oh, I haven't read Poochie Town yet. I really need to read it. And he just stopped, put his coffee down and went, no, you really do need to read it. Like, sort of like, oh yes. Okay. Well, I will, you know, and the combination of the stars aligned, and it kept like calling to me from the table at Gosh. And then, Andy was coming on the show, and I'd read his new book, A Man, and I thought, well, it's time I read this now. So I bought it yesterday and read it on the train home, and I reread it this morning, and then I read Fran, which is the book that precedes it, and I became sort of slightly obsessed with it. And it's pretty much, it's going to be the strangest comic you'll read all year, I'll tell you that now. I'll read you the spiel from the back, because it doesn't explain anything, and it made it more confusing to me, and I don't really know what it means, but this is how they sell it. Do you know what I mean? It's pretty much impossible to describe, and impossible to describe, but the story on the back of the book, when Pupshaw and Pushpaw, who are sort of regular characters who look a bit like big transistor radios with eyes, depart from the orgiastic delights of Poochie Town, the forlorn Frank, who's the aforementioned sort of animal creature who's a regular in his books, is thrown by a twist of fate into an unlikely friendship, propelling him down a long road of escapades and trials that ends in one of the most shocking acts ever depicted in the Frank canon. Which is saying something, because everything is weird in Frank's world. Is that right, Andy, do you think?
Yeah, I think that sounds about right.
Yeah. You basically travel about with this sort of weird, ratty cat creature thing. And it's... Here's some of the highlights from this particular book. He's got this. There's this sort of recurring character who looks like a pig human hybrid. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. Is it Hogman or something like that?
Yeah,
is that
Manhog. Right?
Manhog, that's it. Yeah. And he eats a. They find a nest of birds, and Hogman eats it. He just sort of swallows it, chews it. They sort of regularly take chunks out of each other, and creatures eat them, and then their bits of their limbs grow back. He finds at one point a tuba case, and he opens it, you know, like a musical instrument tuba. Yeah. Opens it, and there's like a curled up snake in it, kind of thing. So he forces a reed into it and blow. They all take turns in blowing really hard, and what grows out of it is this sort of organic disease that floats in the air above them. Which looks like a combination of a disease and petals of a flower, and it's fucking strange.
So what we're saying is it's slice of life.
Yeah, it's like my universe. Yeah. So post Coronation Street, this is how my life goes. But And at one point, a steering wheel sticks out of the earth. I really like this bit, actually, Andy. This is one of my favourite bits, where the steering wheel sticks out. And he sort of steers this steering wheel with Manhog behind him. And they don't move, but the environment around them changes.
And I think that's kind of explaining that without words, his ability to do that. You know what's going on, but it makes no sense. I think that's kind of like he's master of the craft thing. He can just do that without any words, just through images on the page.
Yeah, he can. He really can. And I get this sense that every so often Woodring it's the comic version of him like pointing down at the floor, and when you look down, he kicks you in the arse. Because he's just playing with you the whole time.
Hmm.
And he claims he doesn't completely know what's going on, and the stuff that he does know what's going on, he won't explain. So you really have to, like your comics, really, Andy, you really have to sort of draw your own conclusions. There's a sort of symbolicness to some of it. Fran, the previous book, is a little bit more normal, and it's like a relationship gone wrong, but she does end up on the tongue of a strange creature, you know, sort of. The art, though, is just solid black and white. He does do coloured work as well, and he does do some sort of fine art stuff as well. If you go to his website, you can find. But the it's hard to explain because it's so precise.
It's like your brain is shutting down trying to describe what it actually is.
It really is, it's growing, and it's symbolic, and it's organic, and it's shaped, and it's almost like a really, really precise doodle on occasions.
Mm.
And he draws strange bug-eyed caterpillars and, you know, just weird. Like, if he walks past the pond, it won't just be a pond. There'll be a huge sea creature with big buck teeth in it filling the whole pond, you know. It's a combination between Jack Kirby and Salvador Dali. I think it's where I'm going to go with that, I think.
Bloody hell.
That's
a combo.
Yeah, it's just so strange. But the mechanics of it, you watch and you try and figure out, and you don't. But it really does obsess you as you read it, you know, sort of thing. It's an absolutely beautiful experience.
It's a fully realized world, isn't it? Once you read any of his books, you're kind of straight in that world, and he's built that up over years. It's a brilliant book. I'd recommend it to anyone.
Yeah, it is, and it's so transgressive. You know, when you look at it, there's an anarchic version of Mickey Mouse in it. There's an anarchic version of Porky Pig in it. And you know when you get in, like, Disney movies, you get, like, inanimate objects come to life. Like the candlesticks, is it in Beauty and the Beast, when they're dancing around?
Yeah.
Two of the characters. Yeah. Things happen like that. Just inanimate objects come to life as well. But it makes total and absolute sense within the framework that he's built up over, 35, 40 years, you know, doing this book. There's one moment in it, and I knew you just suddenly go, he is fucking with me, where Frank falls asleep against a tree, and then he opens one eye, then he opens both eyes, and you think, he's just showing me what I think I'm doing, you know, before he pulls the carpet away from me again, you know. As I say, it came out from Fantagraphics. Go to the Fantagraphics site. I wouldn't like to look for it, but I don't suppose that Jim Woodring is on social media.
He is on Facebook, because he sells some of his original artwork.
Somebody bought some this week. I saw someone line somebody bought a page.
Yeah, I actually bought a page off eBay. But
did you?
A drawing from him directly. So if you follow him on Facebook, he does actually post on there quite regularly.
Let's have a look. Yeah.
That's cool.
And his original page is about 500 quid, I'm going to say, something like that.
The one I got was about 400, which, considering, I think he's one of the biggest comic artists of the last 30 years, it's not bad.
Yeah, no, he's great. I know when I was over at Stuart McCune's house, he showed me a page. He's got signed to him. He's got this weird sort of obsession with hooker pipes, almost.
Yeah.
Do you know, this tangled pipe work, you know, like a... Almost looks like the bit you smoke on the end of a hooker pipe if you're in Casablanca or somewhere like that. So things look a little bit like that.
Yeah.
And he drew one of them for Stuart, which he showed me.
Nice.
Crikey.
Yeah, get on it. Get obsessed. Yeah, I've read Pooty Town 4 times now. and I'm even looking at it again now. Yeah. And it's a thing of beauty.
Get on it and get obsessed. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Andy, do you have anything you'd like to recommend to our lovely listeners?
I'll do a quick shout out, because the people I was next to at El Caf They're a collective called It's Frog Lump. Three artists, C-Can, Lucy, and Lizzie. But I'd recommend checking out any of their books. I've got Lucy Haslin's here. It's called Between a Defensible Space. And I thought it was absolutely beautiful. It's all hand-drawn with pencils. Really well-told story. It's doing quite interesting things with the form. And I think she has got a website, which is lucyhaslam.com. Or if you just search for It's Frog Lump, it's got all three artists there.
Ah, nice. Cool. We'll put them in the show notes then. Always like discovering new artists and books here.
Yep.
Awesome stuff. So there you go. I've got so many bloody show notes to do this week. It's unreal.
Yeah. I'm just sending you a link for Alice Munro, actually.
Right. Oh, yeah. So, you know, knowledge is power. And we hope that you've all learned a lot on this week's episode. I know we certainly have, of all kinds, you know. And thank you, Andy, for joining us and talking about your work and everything. It was brilliant. So, and we hope.
Oh yeah, thanks very much for having us. Really enjoyed us.
That's been great, man. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Can I throw a spanner into the works?
Go on.
Yeah.
Competition.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. We for the past couple of weeks, throw that spanner down. Throw it. yeah. We've had comic house competitions for the past 2 weeks. And we thank you to everyone that's entered something. We've been collating it, and we're still not like that. Tony, grow up. You've done very well this week after a shaky start. Don't ruin it now. You're on track for a gold star. no, so we're getting together with Pete. We're judging it, so we're gonna save all that for next time's show. So we'll net on episode 207. Bloody hell. If you entered the competition, stay tuned to that one, because we'll be announcing who's going to win the Comic House collections. And we're going to do another one as well, I think, next week as well, aren't we?
Yeah, that's the plan.
Yeah. But we've been busy doing all sorts of stuff, as well as, you know, whether it be events, comics, Kickstarters,
you know, scripts.
Yeah, sleeping on benches in parks, whatever we've been doing. Yeah, so we thought, rather than rush it out and not think about it, because seriously, with some of the answers that
we'd never do that.
Yeah, with some of the answers we've got, we'd never do that. We'd never just rush out a show. with some of the answers we've got, we really need to put some time and attention on them, because some of them are quite frankly brilliant. So so stay tuned for the competition next week. And likewise, if there was anything on the show that you agreed with, or if you want to send us comics or anything in general, or if, because BAM is happening on Small Press Day, July the 13th, if you know of any other Small Press Day events that are happening in your area or somewhere that more people need to know about, let us know, because that's why we're here, to put the word out about these things, because Small Press Day is a fantastic thing and it's happening all over the UK. So just let us know, and you can let us know awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, you can follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we'll be announcing the next guests or whatever we're doing, or we'll be retweeting the hell out of whatever the three hosts just talk nonsense. So we just retweet that, just for the hell of it, you know, because we're gangsters. If you do Facebook, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you, you know, when you don't want to look at pictures of who wore what to what wedding, and you actually want to talk about some comics, then join the Facebook group Awesome Comics Talk, because it's probably the only place you want to go on Facebook, and there's lots of people getting together to talk about creating comics, comic events, and just everything in general. Sometimes they just like having a laugh about comics, but there's no harm.
And not selling comics. Your Kickstarter. We've had four people join today, and all four of them then tried to get a post past me selling their comic.
And they all got deleted. Yeah, they will not be approved. So there you go.
I'm a mod of the group, and I haven't even tried to.
I don't even put my articles up in there. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's all about comic conversation, and that's why that exists and this show. So thank you very much for listening this week, as always, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a review, subscribe, and it just helps the show, helps get the word out. And the more people listen to the show, the more people discover the great books we talk about each week.
Yep.
We're also on loads of networks: Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on Pod. Is it just me, or does that look like a vagina?
Don't laugh, Dan. Don't encourage him.
He loves that silence after my pod thing every week. He likes that.
Yeah. Trust me, there's a definite sigh in there as well as the lens. So follow us wherever you listen to us. Thank you very much. Now, where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Twitter, Ezoyez. If you go to neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk, today there's quite a few images from the book me and Andy talked about there from Poochie Town. So it will visualize what we tried desperately and badly to describe for you. There you go.
Amazing.
That's a hard task to do, though, so I think you did well.
Yeah, it's not easy.
But definitely check out the pages.
Yeah.
Thank you. Cheers.
And what about you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Yes.
The busiest man in comics.
Yes, he is.
Issue 16, it's going through proofing. I do the correction, and Cinder has done this on Comic House.
Yeah, stop fucking about, and you get nothing.
You sat there with your thumb up your ass. What are you doing?
I'm currently relettering the entire Viper. That's fucking...
Oh, God.
I didn't know you were relettering that as well. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that thing we talked about earlier.
Yeah,
as well.
Stay tuned for more news on that in the future, folks. So
I'm tempted to get a print done of that because I know it'll be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's shaping up to be good, that secret project.
Yes. Oh. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jester Diablo, where I just post a load of nonsense and more artwork. So, you know, get in touch if you want a commission. You can find
banging them out. They're great.
Oh, thank
you. Yeah, mate, you've gone nuts. What's happened to you?
I don't know.
You've given up your job or something? You ain't told us.
Is that what's happened?
And I bought one from you today, you fucking bastard. I knew you knew you'd get me with that one.
Well, no, I just thought I'd just draw. I wanted to draw some monsters, and naturally, I drew a man thing.
Yeah, and I know. Oh, I feel bad because don't say it. You shouldn't have said it out loud because I got in under the wire before Sarah wanted to buy it, didn't she?
You say you're under the wire. No, I will be upfront and honest, Sarah. He did ask pretty much almost immediately after I posted it.
Yeah, we've got a timed WhatsApp picture. I can prove it with. Yeah, with me going, "Oi, Vince, don't sell it. I'll have that one."
But as a result, I'm going to be drawing a man thing again for Sarah anyway. So
you need to do a man thing meet swamp thing for her because I know she likes them both.
That may be happening, Tony. That may be happening.
Nice work, sir.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where you can find me. And Andy, you star, you legend. Where can people find you, your work, etc.?
Yeah. So best place is just on Twitter or Instagram. On both of those, I'm at Om Comics.
Yeah.
There you go. So go forth.
Get on. Seriously, we've talked about your books for years now, man. I absolutely love it.
Thank you very much, man. Appreciate the support.
Yeah. Get on it.
Yeah.
There'll be more to come.
Yeah, definitely. And I know there's some listeners of ours who may not be aware of your work who are going to be big fans. So
That's right up a lot of our listener street, I've got to tell you.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. So go forth, read loads of comics, have a brilliant week, folks, from Dan, Tony, Andy, and myself. What do they do, Dan?
Stay awesome.
He's just getting so good.
He's just warming up, baby.
I know. Jesus. Yeah, I just love it. Anyway. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye. See you later.
Does this my voice sound any different? Because I've got a pop shield now.
No, it sounds the same.
Yeah, it sounds nice and clear. It's less
excellent.
Is it less echoey? I think it is a bit.
Maybe.
Say penis.
Penis.
Yeah. That's
say perfect. I love penis.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say that.
Go on. Dan, I mean,
I love Tony's penis.
No, that's fine, mate. That's
really clear. I'll take.